aren't even planning to go to Mars. They just want to go to the moon. They want first steps of a woman walking on the moon. And I think they, I think pretty much the administration would set it out of wrap if they get that. Basically, they're going back to their original plans before the administration changed this rush to the moon deal. They're thinking moon would be 2028. Orbital situation for NASA astronauts in 2033 around Mars, and then bring them back. You know, worry about landing on Mars at a future time. And they think the money will be better spent in doing that instead of landing on the moon, trying to set up a base, which is very expensive. Engineering behind it is very tough. Trying to develop power plants to keep people there on a regular basis. Trying to dig up the moon, using, you know, to getting the soil and changing that into, if you want to call it soil, the regolith, and changing that into water and oxygen and all of that, hydrogen fuel. They feel that's not necessary. That's the present plan, and I felt it was a good idea, so I was wondering what you, Dick, thought about it, and what Roy thought about it, if you thought it was a good idea as well, to change in the middle of the road here. But I'm in favor of it. Any comments or questions?
Roy, it's going to be very expensive with the gateway and the craft to go from the gateway down to the surface. What's the major purpose of trying to make a permanent base station on the moon? Is it for scientific reasons, radio telescope, optical telescope? It's going to be very expensive. And you stand a chance of building something that can stay permanently at the poles of the moon, but at the equator of the moon, where the temperatures go so extremely high and extremely low, day versus night, 28-day period for a full rotation, with reference to the Earth. Isn't Congress going to say, what are we getting for our money? WS2N, K2RIW?
Yeah, well, basically, that's what they're saying in this bill that they've passed. And eventually, this, you know, go on to the Senate. The Senate would have to eventually come up with an identical bill and so on and so forth. But they're probably a long way from getting this thing signed. But to me, it's a step in the right direction. And yeah, that's exactly what they're saying. You land there, set up a base, just to, like, the purpose isn't for radio astronomy. The purpose would be to dig up the soil and try to get the frozen ice out of Shackleton Crater, you know, and melt that down and treat it, and somehow you're going to eventually make that with electrolysis into oxygen, water, and hydrogen. You'll be able to use those for either breathing or for fuel cells, hydrogen and oxygen for fuel cells. But then, you know, you need a tremendous amount of power to create this electrolysis. So, you know, you're going to need fusion reactors. Yeah, they have the crust, they call it the crusty system, which you're going to develop 10 kilowatts of power. But it means setting up, you know, four or five of these 10 kilowatts fission generators, you know, on the moon. Well, this Congress is more interested. Well, this particular bill is interested in eventually getting ourselves to Mars and making sure that the first person that walks on Mars is an American citizen. That's what they're really getting at. You know, they're going to keep the moon program and drop it. They want to get back to the moon, and you know, they're going to keep that. But in the same token, maybe use the gateway system, having these three or four modules out there, a power and propulsion module, a habitat module, you know, and eventually have that as some kind of launching platform to get to Mars. They're still thinking about utilizing that in that fashion. I don't necessarily agree with that part. You know, I think if you're going to blast off to Mars, you should set up a temporary station around Mars and then eventually dock with that station. and then worry about getting down to the surface in the future. But to me, it's a step in the right direction. Back to you, Dick or Roy.
You're going to need a tremendous amount of energy to run all this. Any talk of putting up a very large solar array on top of a local mountain at the pole, and it slowly rotates and tracks the sun? Can you put up a big enough array to gather enough energy? Or is all of this going to be maintained by radioactive thermal generators? Very expensive, dangerous. It does sound like a project that's got tremendous amount of cost, but what do you really get in return? Preparing to go to Mars is not a good enough motivation, in my opinion. It's got to be something about a base on the moon that's worth fighting for, that's going to be worth a huge percentage of the NASA budget in order to do it. Over to you, Roy. I mean, Paul, K2IW.
WS2N. I agree, and that's what I've gotten out of this report. You know, we talked about that probably for years on the net. The pros and cons of doing something like this. The main goal is really to set a base up on the moon. And the reason for it is because other countries are going to want to set the base up on the moon. You know, it's that type of thing. Eventually, I'm sure they're going to use it for radio astronomy. But even with that, you'd like to set that up on the dark side of the moon. They plan on doing a lot of solar panels on this. The original landing place will be on the south pole of the moon, where it stays light most of the time. They have dark periods, but most of the time it's light. And they have craters that they can go into. I'm pretty sure that there's ice down there for billions of years that they can use. The idea came because it's so expensive to get, to bring up fuel with you to go to Mars. So if you could manufacture essentially the fuel that you're going to need on the moon, it would be a lot cheaper leaving the gravity well of the moon with all the fuel manufactured on the moon instead of bringing it from Earth. I mean, that's how this whole thing got started. Back to you, Dick.
Radio listen.
Well, anyway, that's the plan. I'll be interested to see how far it gets. I don't expect it to get, past 100%, but to me it's a step in the right direction that these people, especially Representative Kenya Horn, Democrat of Oklahoma, chair for this particular committee. So hopefully they've already gotten together with the Republicans on a committee, so it's bipartisan. They sent it off to the full committee, and the full committee voted for it. They plan on eventually sending it to the House, where they expect it to pass. But then after that, then it goes to the Senate. I'm sure it's going to run into a lot of trouble once it gets to the Senate. So, okay, nobody has any comments, so I'll start going through a couple of these important launches I think that are coming up.
Can you give us a quick report on the current status of James Webb? Wasn't that supposed to eventually be launched quite a number of years ago? And has it gone through some further delays? NASA getting a little bit shaky about continuing to fund this many-dollar overrun project. And they're so far downrange, they can't possibly cancel it. The beginning was so long ago, but the end is not yet in sight. So what's the current predicted launch date for James Webb, Paul? WS2N, K2IW.
Yeah, again, just talking about James Webb a couple of weeks ago, and supposed to be going up on March of 2021, so March of next year, a little over a year from now. And that was the present plan as of a couple of weeks ago. Now this report just came out from the Government Accountability Office, the GAO, and they're the ones that do all these studies and check to see the viability of all these plans that people have, how they're doing, how the contracts are going. James Webb is not going too good. they figure it's probably, I read recently, a 12% chance of this thing going off when it's supposed to in March. Now you gotta remember, this is delayed. I mean, this thing was supposed to go up 2017. It was supposed to be originally, $5 billion or something, and then went up to $8 billion. And last I heard it, I think it's a $10 billion project over all these years. You know, it's not 1 year, you know, it's over a decade. But now they think minimum of a 4 month delay, so that, you know, they're looking at July or August 2021. And that's if nothing else creeps up. It's got to go through a lot more testing. They've got a lot of the bugs worked out of it. Have a lot of problems, you know, unfolding and folding this thing. And, you know, it's as big as a tennis court. And if there's no more problems, yeah, they might get it off by August of next year. Suppose something else creeps up. And, you know, it could go on beyond that. Now, one thing I'm concerned about, which I haven't read yet, let me drop it. Get this telescope, you know, off the ground and put into the L2 position, you know, 1 million miles away from Earth, and just sit there. Need a big rocket. And they planned on using the Ariane 5 rocket 10, 15 years ago. They signed a deal with the European Space Agency to do that. You know, we weren't going to pay for the launch. We were just going to, you know, have them, that, you know, that was going to be one of their pieces of contribution to get science back. You know, NASA shares science with their people, and their deal was, we'll launch the rocket for you. Well, it's still going to be the case, but by that time, last I heard, they were supposed to retire, European Space Agency retire the Ariane 5 rocket launches from South America, you know, French Guiana. You know, by that time, I mean, as it was in March, I think they were going to be like one of the last, if one other flight was going to take off after that. But that means they're going to get into the Ariane 6, which is under development, which, I mean, it's going to be really a better rocket. But yeah, it's going to be an unproven rocket. Now you're putting a $10 billion craft onto a brand new rocket that's not really proven yet. Ariane 5, you know, it's gone up 78 different times or something, the newest version of it, and had one problem on their first launch or something. But, you know, it's essentially a 100% death rate on the Ariane 5, and now they're going to eventually, if it goes any later than August, they might have to eventually start thinking about the Ariane 6. Then what do? You know, that's some roll. You know, they're really rolling the dice on this whole setup. You know, I don't think it's going to be canceled. It's too much, too much involved in it. But they better get it off the ground soon. Somebody's not going to be happy about the time frame. K2RIWWS.
Part of New York City.
Okay, let me see if I have it. Okay, so maybe I timed out. Okay, there are a couple of, like I said before, a couple of important launches, and one of them coming up next Sunday at this time, 11 o'clock. If it's not scrubbed, you know, the way launches go. Right now, that's the present plan. In fact, it was supposed to go a few days earlier before that. Now, pushed into the net time, 11 o'clock next week, and it's called the Solar Orbiter. The Solar Orbiter was designed by the European Space Agency to essentially go into solar orbit, but not the typical orbit that we think of. We think of the ecliptic, you know, going around that way, and that's the way the Parker solar probe is going in right now. We launched that last year, and that's doing very good. That's the one that's going in below the orbit of Mercury, and then eventually comes out a little further away, around the orbit of Venus, going back in over and over again. In science, it doesn't really have any cameras on board because it would be toast, you know. But it does have all these detectors on board for that spacecraft. It's got a 4-inch, you know, heat shield, carbon heat shield to protect it. We talked about that many times. But this solar orbiter, I mean, Parker was built by NASA. This one's built by European Space Agency. And that will be launched on Sunday by the Americans. It's going to launch the European Space Agency solar probe for them, which is weird. You know, they're launching our telescope, our James Webb Space Telescope, and here we are using an Atlas V to put the solar orbiter into space. Now, this one will also be able to duck in, you know, around, I think, a little bit below the orbit of Mercury. Not as close as the Parker solar probe. Still pretty close. The difference is this one's going to have cameras on it. You know, it's going to have detectors and all the things, checking the magnetic field and looking into the 11-year cycle of why we have, why it's 11 years and how come sometimes it's stronger one and a weaker one. And it'll do all of that. But it's got these interesting cameras that are going to, once in a while, mechanically, it's going to open up these shutters in the front and look at the sun and take pictures. But they're really not really interested in the ecliptic. We have plenty of pictures and things of the sun. They're looking for the polar view of this, you know, north and southern view of the sun. And they, to get it there, they need to set up the orbit to go near Venus over and over again. And each time they go near Venus, they're going to change the angle or the inclination of the flight. And eventually, it will get higher and higher. And not quite into a perfect polar orbit, but close enough to look down and the north and the south poles of the sun and really look at these magnetic fields and how everything works. We've only had one spacecraft out of all the decades NASA's been flying, and that was the Ulysses probe. Ulysses probe did a half a dozen passes over the north and southern poles. It really didn't have cameras on board. It had detectors, and it never really got all that close to the sun. In fact, it was really probably maybe as close as Earth. Get it into that orbit. In those days, what they did is they sent it out to Jupiter. They got it to Jupiter, and that one pass near Jupiter changed the whole inclination to 90 degrees, and after that, it was able to go over the north and south pole of the sun, but no real pictures, and that was back in 1990, back in the 1990s. So this new one will be able to, time passes, so the technology is really advanced. So I'll be interested to see the solar probe get off the ground next Sunday at this time. I'm sure I'll definitely have it on the computer. Maybe I can give you a 5-4-3-2-1 when it launches. This is WS2N for the Space Network. Any questions or comments? Okay, I know this happened last week, but it was another launch of SpaceX. They had launched their latest flight of the Starlink missions. Starlink, eventually they're going to have a couple of thousand satellites up there to initially start selling subscriptions for broadband service, you know, broadband TV, you know, 4K TV, the whole bit, and they've already got, they have 180, now they got 240 satellites up there. Each time they do this, they put another 60 satellites into space, each one weighing over 500 pounds, each one with its own Krypton thrusters to maneuver itself into the proper location. Krypton thrusters are really ion thrusters. Instead of using the typical xenon gas that they use for ion thrusters, Krypton is a lot less expensive, and since you're going to put up thousands of these satellites, SpaceX went with that, and good enough for their purposes. If they fail, they could actually turn on the thrusters and deorbit themselves and burn up in the atmosphere. When they were first launched a year or so ago, the first ones had 95% capability of burning up in the atmosphere, 100%. And now they're going to burn up 100%. They've redesigned them. They're starting to paint them like blackish colors so they don't have that high reflective light that the astronomers are starting to complain about. So they're starting to improve things. And like I said, this is the second flight just this year of the Starlink. If SpaceX plans go the way they do, they plan on launching at least 18 more of these things by the end of the year. So they're going to have enough satellites to start selling subscriptions by the end of the year. They're going to keep going after that. Once, I mean, they need like, you know, 1,200, 1,500 satellites. Plan on eventually having thousands of these things. Like, they have a contract up, you know, to manufacture 12,000. Now they just put a request in for 40,000 more, you know. And the reason for it, not that they're going to have 40,000 up at one time, but eventually these things are going to fail. You know, they think maybe 4, 5, 6 years, and they start failing. When they know they're failing, the krypton ion thrusters will come on, and they'll burn up in the atmosphere, but then they'll be replaced. That's it. There's a tremendous amount of effort in trying to sell these broadband systems, not only to America, but around the world. Any comments or questions?
WB2GXM.
How you doing? WB2GXM, go ahead.
Do I understand that this network of satellites will allow everyone in their own homes or anywhere on the planet to access the internet for free?
No, it's not going to be for free. Elon Musk, they're going to charge, and I haven't figured out or I haven't read what they're going to charge people. But yeah, they plan on having this all in its infrastructure, the whole setup by, I think, 6 months now. They think would be the earliest time they would be able to start selling subscription for Starlink. And they're going to need an antenna. Everybody's going to have an antenna. You know, I'll have to put this thing on the side of my wall or on the roof, I guess. And I saw it look around 18 inches in diameter. It's got a cover on top and bottom. It's supposed to have phased array antennas, four different settings, or, you know, for the antenna to be at, you know, I guess you're going to get a signal from the satellite, and it's going to change your phased array antenna, you know, look one way or the other as these things pass overhead. And they said there's some kind of mechanical thing that's also going to be changed, so I don't think it's going to be all electronically phased. I think there's some kind of mechanical change inside the antenna that's going to occur too. But I haven't really seen, you know, an exploded view of what this thing looks like. Right now it just looks like a flying saucer. Back to you.
All right, thank you very much.
Yeah, I'm sure Elon Musk has a plan for this. I mean, he's got a factory set up manufacturing these things. And I guess he's going to have to set up a factory to, you know, start manufacturing millions of these antennas. I haven't heard anything about that yet. So, knowing this guy, he has a plan. Okay, so that'll be one launch. On the same day, next week, a little earlier, 5:39 is the time. They're going to have a launch from Wallops Island, Virginia. So that will be a launch of an Antares rocket. Antares is now owned by, that rocket is owned by Northrop Grumman. Used to be Orbital ATK, and Northrop Grumman bought them up not too long ago. So the designation is NG-13. And, you know, 13 is the 13th cargo vehicle that they're sending to the International Space Station under their contract. You know, NASA gave SpaceX a contract for all the cargo vehicles that they've sent up. And they gave Northrop Grumman now a contract. So they're going to bring up, you know, another 7,000 pounds or so of material for the space station. And that will be, you know, from Virginia. So it's possible that you can, if you have a low horizon view, in New York anyway, if you look out to the southwest, or south-southwest, you'll be able to see the engine lights of the rocket go up. I've seen it once. I know somebody that saw it twice. And, you know, it'd be quite interesting to view that, but that would be, you know, because, you know, it doesn't have to be dark here. It's not like a reflection from the sun. So as long as it's not cloudy, 5:39 next Sunday, you'll be able to see that go up. It's the Cygnus cargo vehicle. It'll dock with the, the Harmony module, one of the many modules that attach to the International Space Station. They'll bolt it all up. They actually call it berthing. They'll berth it up and load it. And in fact, there's one leaving, I think, within a day or two from the space station. Well, I think that just left, and it goes on an extended mission. It'll spend like another month in space. The last one spent a couple of months in space before they decided to deorbit the Cygnus spacecraft. So that's another launch coming up, WS2S. Also on February 6th, that's a Thursday, they have a deorbit of a Soyuz craft. They're going to bring a crew of three back from the International Space Station. That will leave three on board. One of the people coming back is Christina Cook. Christina has been up there. She's been an astronaut on the space station almost a year. She was launched last March. So I think a few more weeks from now, she would have made a year. So bring her back. She's broken all kinds of records. Naturally broke all the records for women. Mike Kelly has got her beat by a couple of weeks. He spent almost a year up there as well a while back. Not Mark Kelly, Scott Kelly. His brother is Mark Kelly. Mark is the one that's running. He's going to run for senator in Arizona. But he was also an astronaut. He's retired. They're both retired now. So, he spent the year up there. And now Christina is coming back. Must have saw about a dozen vehicles attached to the space station and detached in the time that she's been up there. Did six different spacewalks, including three spacewalks with Jessica Meir. So that's three spacewalks that were done both, all by women. So they really put a record on that. I remember last October, it was going to be a big deal. It was the first time two women were going to be doing an EVA together. That they've done it two more times. So their purpose was really redoing the batteries on the space station, changing out all these, each battery on Earth would probably weigh about 400 pounds. Pulled out all these old nickel hydrogen batteries, replaced them with the lithium ion batteries. The nickel hydrogen ones were, they would have to pull out, for every two they would pull out, they would put back one lithium ion. As we know, a lithium ion is a lot better than the old batteries. They have the same amount of amp hour rating as the other ones. Where they're plugged into these massive things, it's part of this massive pallet type of deal, and they take out, one of these things, they have to put in, take out two and put in one, and that means they need a whole jumper set up to make up for the batteries that are lost, that are not there anymore. So that involved a lot of time, and it took quite a few spacewalks to get that done. And that was only 25% of the power system that has been replaced. These two have done. A couple of years ago, they did, another crew did the same thing. So this is the third grouping that has been done. There's one more about a year or so from now. They're going to do that again. They're going to send up another group of batteries to be replaced. This is WS2N. Time for another radio. For some reason, we get RF coming back into this radio for some reason. I hear static as they transmit. That's not good. Let's see. Trying to see if there were any other important topics. I'm starting to run out of time. There is one satellite up there that was launched recently by a company called Tether Unlimited. Tether Unlimited, their goal is to see if you could deorbit a satellite with just a tether. So, they have a little box that opens up and this 75-meter long metallic tether, unreeled from this satellite. By doing that, it picks up atmospheric drag, it picks up the magnetic field of the Earth that's going around and float it down. was to see if it could deorbit, and it didn't. A satellite that would have stayed up there, you know, maybe, you know, 100 years has deorbited inside of, you know, inside of no time because of this tether that they dropped out. And if it works out, they plan on, you know, selling that technology to everybody, you know, that puts up satellites. You know, just, you know, when the time is over for that satellite, let out this big tether and have it deorbit. So, that would be good. And that turned out to be very successful. Quick topic. The Voyager spacecraft, the Voyager 2, there's Voyager 1 and 2. Voyager 2 had a problem with their power. It shut itself down or cut back on its power dramatically because it detected a problem on the spacecraft. But Jet Propulsion Laboratory was able to fix it up. They sent signals back up. It takes almost 18 hours to get the signal up there, or 18 hours to come back. The thing is like, you know, many, many times the distance of Pluto, and they're still communicating with it. And they apparently got it back into operation. There was a problem, I'm not sure the exact detail, but Voyager 1 and Voyager 2 is still traveling, you know, beyond the solar system, launching it. They were both launched a couple of weeks apart in 1977. So that's pretty much it for now. I'll bring the net to a close. See if anybody has any last comments or topics. If not, for now we'll turn over the net to Dick, K2RIW, WS2N.
Mass of the pink.
Okay, lost Dick for now. All right, I really don't have anything else, but we'll be back here next week. Thank all the stations that stood by and listened, all the stations that participated in the net. And next time I'm on the radio would be tomorrow. Yeah, Club InfoNet, which is on at 8:30 on both these repeaters. You don't have to be a member to check in, and you find out what's going on with the club. I'm going to turn it over to Roy. Let's stick, joins us, comes back. AC2GS, WS2N.
Okay, very good, Paul. Just want to remind everyone that if you have any questions, mailbag questions for Dick, questions for Paul, questions for myself, the one email that will get here hopefully is mailbag@ac2gs.com. Again, mailbag@ac2gs.com. And I put up all the links to all the stories that I mentioned, and you can get to them on your web browser by just typing roy.acbs.com. And as always, I want to thank Paul and Dick for giving me the opportunity to be here these Sunday nights, and all the people who participated, and even those people who just listened to me as I went on and on and on and on. I wish everyone a happy, healthy week. Stay away from people coughing and sneezing and such. And this is Alpha Charlie 2 Golf Sierra, and I'll be going clear now.
And that's
73 Roy. We'll see you next week. WS2N clear.
Now we're talking about to the emergency. Another sign of to me.
That tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater.
Cumulus Media.
The time is 12:04 a.m. 73, and good night from the W2VL repeater. The time is 12:04 a.m. 73, and good night from the W2VL repeater.
Person and several American.
That tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater.
Impurity of
official. That tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater.
Trunk radio. Marlena and Gary.
That tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater.
Patients and new.
That tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater.
And you hear all this?
That tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater.
Learn how. We didn't get that.
This is the W2VL repeater. Good morning. The time is 5 o'clock a.m. That tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater.
Hey, when he was a kid at the top of the...
That tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater.
Send this in every... Mahomes getting the...
That tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater.
The weather center. Sound code. Hey Kelly, we can he rig the last to be flat? Listen, folks, he was looking for. About to give you
that tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater.
It's not gonna get that one. Information you like in a burning
WBCCS. K2KNB, WBTZSC.
Good morning, and to RBP Mobile.
Morning, Matt. How was your weekend, Katie?
KD2KNH, great. And to RBP, it was fantastic. Saturday was a long day, and I pretty much got home probably about 10:30 or so, maybe by 11-ish. I just crashed. I had a very busy day Saturday. I was up like 5:30 in the morning. I was out at the Babylon Transit. We went to Islanders game at Barkley. But before that, I visited my stepdaughter in her apartment. Neat spot was Brooklyn. And then Barkley Center to the game. From there, I got home on, got into Babylon maybe about 6:15. Irish Coffee Pub. We had the winter now with the Great Tampa Am Club. They give out prizes. I won 2 insulators. That's what I won. Back to you.
Well, that's fantastic. Sounds like you had a good time, so that's what it's all about. And I never have too many insulators.
Remember, it's like these women that they got their ham license, but they're new and they don't really know a lot. They won this networking test kit. Like I got one, a cheap one. I think it's the one when you punch down wires, you can measure the correctly. I think they won. I should have won that. But what I'm going to do with the insulators, I have a random wire antenna. I want to take, I either use the same wire or just buy a new wire. I'm going to take, I have a ninth now. I think I'm going to make I got the insulators now. I think I'm going to get an in-fed antenna that I'm going to back up to my dipole.
Sounds like a plan. Nothing wrong with it.
Do a counterpoise. I'm trying to do my research on it. This guy, Ed, I got his call. Really into he's fixing stuff. You know what Great Subway does? When we do our contest, and say you want to do 40 meters, they'll actually put a 40 meter filter on the antenna. And they just do good with this stuff and fixing dive duplexes. So I saw him. Him and his wife is the one that got the whole thing coordinated. He has no clue about it. I have to see if I can find other people. I think you have to do a counterpoise or something. I'm not sure, but I'm going to figure it out.
Well, there's a ton of information available. When I put mine up, it goes up in a slope.
I think I wanted it at Limewalk. I think I got the handbook, the ARL handbook, I think. I want to look in there. Maybe they got the information out. You know what I'm going to do when I do this thing? I'm thinking, I got trees in the front yard. I'll just probably put it in the woods, far out as I can. Get a rope up there, but if I can get another rope in the tree, pull it up and bring it right in to the shaft. Allen thing you can keep. Maybe I can mount it down on bottom. Maybe I can mount it on the ground. No, I have to do my homework, but this will be the.
Alright, well mine I mount about 5 foot up on a fence post. Have a push up pole. The counterpoise runs out in there. That works fine. Very compromised, 1-6.
I'd like to make it 133 feet, but maybe. This morning, when I was on BreakfastNet, One of the guys that was checking in from Montana. The other day, I was on the internet over to Kentucky. So the guy's checking in, talking to our net controller. Fine. So I have my spreadsheet right in front of me on the control sit. I didn't have Kentucky. They asked the guy to give me his call. I logged it. Got Kentucky. So this morning, K7, Ice Cold Beer, Indy Bravo, he was in my building. I got him logged now. Then I got contact, and I just walked. I got work call.
Fantastic. Well, luck with completing that. I just don't seem to find a lot of time to get on.
Like, great.
Glad to hear it.
Been on at night. I was on next at night. I haven't had time. Or I was doing maybe fired and stuff. And I don't like it tired a lot. It might be get up early and go to bed late. Or it could be also I do brush of medicine. Maybe it's the blood medicine. I'm not sure. I run around a lot. I'm just having a lot of fun. Oh, I'm going to do it my 7100. I have a Linko Parasol, but it's not Bay uses. But I have a Astron Parasol. I was going to sell it, but what can I? I didn't want to put my Astron back. I have a case with my. Should I put some foam in or maybe cut it out? And I'll use my operations and carry it. You know, so I didn't want to put the Astron Parasol back, but this weekend. But let me give it back to you.
Manage. Well, I'm assuming the Astron is a linear rather than switching and then carry with you, so.
And what I want to do is, I was going to buy another Linko, but you know, if I sold that, I'm not going to go. I'm going to use it. If it dies, then maybe I replace it. So what I'm going to do is the wires that come in, power cable that came with, wired it up, and it's very like, I drilled holes in the desk and brought up and put it in the terminal. I went to Lowe's and have it. I'm going to go to Home Depot, get like 10 wire. It's like a zipper, it's branded, it's a zipper wire. So I'm going to take the power cable and I'm going to cut it up to a certain point, solder on and hook that up to the Astron. And what I'm also going to do is, I got my dad's 2410 UHF, VHF steel. I'm going to put that back in the shack and I'm going to have an AB switch. I do have a microphone for it, or I might just have an AB switch for it, and I'm going to put that back in the shack, Anna.
All right, sounds like you got a lot of a lot of plans and iconic on your radio.
On my radio?
The Peconic repeater.
So what's the frequency?
Look.
Young man.
You can email me at my call letter at outlook.com, and I could program it into my base station at home. So.
20, got great coverage.
6820, what's the, what the L for? Is it the one to the PL?
Hold on a second, I'll look it up.
WB2ZSC. WKNB, WB2ZSC.
WT, listen to W2VL. My mark.
That tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater.
Chuck Norris,
the NY2H bubble.
Hello, CQ. This is a UK station gaining access to your repeater via Echolink. This station, Mike 3, Fox Golf Romeo. Mike 3, Fox Golf Romeo, calling CQ and standing by for any possible contact.
Mike 3, Fox Golf Radio. M3FGR, this is November Yankee 2 Hotel, NY2H. Over.
Thank you, SL, sir. November Yankee 2 Hotel. Thank you for coming back to my call, sir. You do have my call sign, Mike 3, Fox Golf Romeo, and I'm sure you appreciate I'm accessing your repeater via the Echolink system. Operator this way, sir, is Dave. Delta Alpha Victor Echo, and my location 80 miles west of London. QSL?
QSL, Dave. Name here is Lou, Lima Oscar Uniform, and I'm about 60 miles east of New York City, and it's 44 degrees Fahrenheit, so I don't know what that is in Celsius. It's probably in the single digit Celsius, on a overcast day. We did have some rain, but that's cleared up. You're sounding good. So you're west of London. I suppose you might be near the coast. I don't know. So back to you, Dave.
November Yankee 2 Hotel, Mike 3, FGR returning. Negative on near the coast, sir. I'm sure you've seen the map of the UK. London's sort of down there on the right towards the bottom. And if you imagine where Wales is, to the west of the England, I'm halfway between London and Wales, sir, along what we call the M4 corridor, which is one of our larger motorways. When I say large, it probably looks like a small little road to you guys. But yeah, I'm sure you've got an idea, sir. Anyway, I'm in a very old railway town, sir. We used to be very famous for the manufacture of the large locomotion engines for the Great Western Railways. You know, it was building all the big steam engines and then the diesel trains. Regretfully, they've all closed down now, sir, and just left us with a steam museum. A little bit about myself, sir. I'm a retired British telecom engineer. I used to install the phone systems in the big buildings, factories, offices, hospitals and shops. I did that for the last 27 years of my working life, and now retired, sir, so hopefully I can enjoy some of my hobbies and pastimes, and obviously amateur radio is one of them. November Yankee 2 Hotel, Mike 3, FTR in the UK.
QSL, very good, Dave. Telecom industry, you know, I guess you've seen a lot of change. I'm a retired software engineer, and I understand there's a product out there called Asterisk, which is, I guess, a virtual PBX telephone switching. I don't know if you're familiar with that at all or not, but alrighty, very good. And yeah, good on the geography. I am mobile right now, by the way. And so I was wondering, I saw that there was a big celebration, I guess it was in London, over the Brexit, which I guess is a political blend. We've got many over on this side of the pond also. And I guess half the team is on one side and half is on the other, so you probably have the same situation over there. Back to you, Dave. M3FGR, this is NY2H.
Mike 3, FGR returning. I was about to acknowledge another station that logged in via the Echo Link, but he sort of stayed there for another 30 seconds and he disappeared. Well, obviously he's not monitoring now because I see he logged off. Yeah, it's just the same, sir. There's pros and cons to staying and leaving, sir. I'd like to think that I'm of the age now where it's not going to affect me either way. It's like my grandchildren that is going to find any major difference, but even they're not children now. One of them's 23 and the youngest one's 19. Yeah, it'll be them that feels any disadvantages or advantages. I just hope I've done my bit during my working life that I can, as I say, now enjoy my spare time. Yes, I have seen a lot of changes in the telecom industry. They don't even have phones now, do they? Well, not the phones that I used to use. The ones that I was installing was actually a Canadian system called a Meridian Northstar. May even recognise it from the different buildings that you've been in. That was a very big popular one with British Telecom over here. But apart from amateur radio, sir, I'm into fishing in the UK, the rivers and lakes over here. I'm also a licensed firearms holder in the UK. I won't say I do hunting because you guys sort of laugh when I say that. I do pest control over here, which is controlling the pigeons, rabbits, an occasional fox if he's been in there and decimated all the chickens. Well, that keeps me a little bit healthy and fit, wandering around the fields and in and out of the woods. And I like the country life. I'll sit out there in the woods watching all the deer and the badgers and get a lot of enjoyment from just sitting there watching. And I'm sure it's going to happen where I'm going to be going over there more and more and leaving all the rifles and the shotguns behind and just taking a camera. So I wonder what are the past times that are interesting you have there, Lynn. I'm sure it's not just amateur radio. November Yankee 2 Hotel, Mike 3, FTR, Dave in the UK.
This is NY2H. Alrighty, Dave. Very, very fine. Well, fishing and amateur radio, in my mind, have some commonality, especially as, you know, when you put that CQ out there, it's like putting the hook into the water, and you don't know if you're going to get a bite or not. So that makes it exciting, I think. Yeah, I've been retired for about 6 years now, and like you, it's time to kind of appreciate things, lay back. So hobby-wise, other than amateur radio, I mean, maybe, you know, into science, into, actually, I watch a lot of YouTubes now. I find that's an incredible source of information. So technical, medical, that kind of thing. So I'm curious. So I guess that's part of it. Travel is another. I'll be going to Florida next week. There's a ham fest called Hamcation in Orlando. In December I was in Hawaii for 2 weeks. So that was very nice. Back to you, sir. NY2H.
M3 FGR returning. I just left the break there, Lou, in case any of the other local guys was waiting to get in on your repeater there. Well, it certainly sounds like you're enjoying your retirement, sir. Good for you. I'm just going to confirm that you did say that you were mobile, sir. You've actually certainly come up. I'm wondering if you're getting closer to the repeater or going away from it. But right on that last over, the actual audio even come up another good 10 there. Apologise, sir. I've lost me thread now, as we say in the UK. I think I would like to start travelling around now. I am tied a little bit at the moment. A good friend of mine who's also a licensed amateur, unfortunately, he's just gone into a nursing home, or fairly recently, and he's not allowed any transmission gear. So I thought I was doing a good thing. I set him up with a scanner so that he could monitor the VHF and UHF, and a general cover receiver. And even with that, I could see it sort of put a smile on his face, and he was a lot happier. And then somebody suggested I set him up with the Echolink system. I don't know, I've been licensed myself for 17 years. I'd heard of Echolink, but I truthfully didn't have any knowledge of it. So I started finding out about 2 weeks ago what Echolink was, and set it up on my own PC, which I'm using now. And set it up on a laptop for my friend in the nursing home. And it's made such a big difference to him. He's really sort of switched back on his mind again. He's active, he's keen, get up and do things. And I think it's another marvellous arm of the hobby of amateur radio. Admitted, some people are saying, well, it's not true amateur radio, you know, you might as well be using Skype. But certainly for my friend, it's his only option of staying on the bands and keeping in contact. And as I say, I only just found out and started learning about it a couple of weeks ago. And to be truthful with you, Lou, I'm enjoying it myself. I thought, well, I've got a spare hour and a half. I'm going to switch it on and put a few calls out. And like you say, it is like fishing. Put a CQ out, even via Echo Link. And you know, you still meet a lot of nice, nearly said guys, but there's quite a few.
Alrighty, Dave. Very, very fine. Yeah, currently I'm moving away from the repeater, but when you had asked, I was moving towards it, so I was southbound, now I'm westbound. This repeater's actually linked with another one, much closer to New York City. So you may hear some fellas down from that end also. Let's see, what else? Trying to recall what else you might have mentioned, and it's slipping away. But Echo Link. So I had the pleasure of meeting the author of Echo Link, Jonathan Taylor. He's also into information technology. He works for a major corporation. And he put this system together and quite generously and altruistically gave it to the ham community. So it's great, yeah. You made him happy, so that's a good thing. Alrighty, I'm going to clear now. Dave, it's been quite a pleasure meeting you and talking. Hopefully we'll be able to do this again. But I will say 7-3, your final. And I guess it's afternoon. It's just about almost 9:45 here, a.m. So hope to see you again, Dave. M3. FGR, this is NY2H Mobile.
NY2H Mobile, Lou. M3 FGR, Dave in the UK. I think you've picked the right time there, Lou. You're just about getting into the box on your last over there. So parts of it I did miss, Lou, but a real pleasure talking to you, sir. You have a safe journey and enjoy your day. It's only just started for you. 73's from the UK there, Lee. You take care, and hopefully we'll catch each other further down the log. Mike 3, FGR, Dave in the UK, will be monitoring.
73, Dave.
That tonight at 8:30, this is the W2VL repeater.
November 2, Victor Hotel, Zulu Mobile, listening.
W2.
Good morning, Ken. KD2OGB, how you doing?
What's up, Craig? It's 8:07 here in the morning. And heading out of town to go to Colorado this morning. It's about an hour and a half drive south. And overcast, and they're predicting that, it fell 60 degrees last night. Down in Denver, it's going to drop 70 degrees today, and they're going to have a tremendous amount of snow, as they predict. We're going to get a couple of inches tonight. Back to you.
8:07 in your area? It's 10:07 in my area.